Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
All right, let's get the elephant out of the room real quick. As has been announced this past week, the owners of 73 Dream Studios Variety Show, they have officially sold the business to me. And I know what y'all are thinking. I mean, Ray's only ever hosted the podcast. Ray's only ever edited the podcast. I mean, rather mediocrely, I'll admit. What's Ray know about running a business? What's Ray know about keeping a show together? Well, not to brag, I've got quite a few years of acting experience, not just as being a stagehand or an actor, but also helping to keep shows together, to help keep the team together. I've got years of experience in the workforce to also help keep a positive face and keep the team together, and of making clear-cut goals and achieving them. And you know what? The goal remains the same. When this company was founded, the goal was to entertain, to keep smiles on people's faces through hard times. This company was founded right towards the beginning of COVID-19. And when everyone was stuck in their homes, including myself, I didn't want to just sit back. I wanted to help do my part to put smiles on everyone's faces, to help get their minds off of issues for just a little while longer. And you know why I'm continuing to do this? You know why I said, you know what? Yeah, I'll buy out. I'll buy out my own contract. I'll buy out the rights and the licenses to the studio name, to everything. Because I still believe in that message. Because when I'm sitting at home thinking about everything that I've lost, I turn to shows like this one. I turn to my comforts, to my escapes, and to be a better person, and to just get a smile back on my face so that I can continue my day. And you know what? As long as I'm doing this, if I'm even reaching one person and putting a smile on their face, then it's worth it. It's worth every penny. So going forward, I am no longer being paid to do this. I would hardly call what I was doing before as being paid, but I am currently the only employee. I am still going to have my partner Cicely on with me. I'm still going to have my friend JP on with me. Unfortunately, I am not in a position to pay them, so it's going to be volunteer work for a little bit. But this is going to be sustainable. This is going to be me putting my nose to the grindstone and doing my part to help keep this going. I love each and every one of you. I love everyone that's come and lend it their ears to this podcast. And I hope that I can continue to give back to you. With that said, we're going to be running off of some sponsors. So hopefully we'll get more sponsors as time goes on. Definitely share this podcast with all of your friends. Let them know this is a fully independent podcast and that the message is still the same. We love each and every one of you, and we are here for you. So with that said, as we've already said in the intro, welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
Yay!
All right, now with that out of the way, we are going to welcome you to the Mystery Motel. Today's subject is Gone Girl. Quick facts on Gone Girl. It was directed by David Fincher. The screenplay was written by Gillian Flynn, based on the novel of the same name, also written by Gillian Flynn. It was produced by Arno Michael, Joshua Donen, Reese Witherspoon, Sean Chaffin, Regency Enterprise, and TSG Entertainment. The cinematographer was Jeff Cronenweth. The editor was Kirk Baxter. Music was done by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Distributed by 20th Century Fox, it was released October 3rd, 2014, with a runtime of 2 hours and 29 minutes. It was done on a budget of, reportedly, $61 million, to a box office of $369.3 million. Alright, we're going to look at the character key here. We got Ben Affleck as the main character, Nicholas Dunn, the husband of a story and a teacher. We have Rosamund Pike as Amy Elliott Dunn, Nix's missing wife. That's right, we got a missing wife case here. We got Neil Patrick Harris. What? Neil Patrick Harris as Desi Collings, Amy's wealthy ex-boyfriend. Tyler Perry as Tanner Bolt, Nix's attorney. I gotta tell you right now, this is a very serious film, and to see Tyler Perry in a very serious role was so shocking to me. I literally grew up on all of Tyler Perry's shows, like, on TBS and his movies, so to see him in such a serious role was quite a shock to the system. We got Carrie Coon as Margaret Dunn, Nix's twin sister. Kim Dickens as Detective Rhonda Boney, the lead investigator. Patrick Fugia as Officer James Gilpin, Boney's his partner. Missy Pyle as Ellen Abbott, a TV host based on Nancy Grace. Emily Ratajkowski as Andrea Fitzgerald, Nix's student. And Casey Wilson as Noelle Hawthorne, Nick and Amy's neighbor. And of course, there is many more people that make up this ensemble. Those are just some key characters. Now, before I dive into the plot, there is, of course, going to be a spoiler warning. We are going to be discussing this film in full. Now, I'm going to give you the spoiler warning now. And honestly, I do suggest checking out this film. I don't believe it's on streaming right now. I'm going to fact check myself there. Let's see here. Where to stream Gone Girl? Okay, it is. Okay, it's on Amazon Prime Video. So if you got Amazon Prime Video, fire it up and check out Gone Girl. Otherwise, you're going to be looking at a rental fee of about $4 if you want to get it from YouTube, Apple TV, Google Play, Vudu. But if you have Amazon Prime Video, fire up Gone Girl, 2.5 hours, and then you can come back and you can hear all the awesome stuff. But if you don't want to do that, if you're just here to listen to me talk, that's great too. I'm here for it. You're here for it. Let's get down to business. All right, so the opening of Gone Girl, we get to see Nick. Also, we get like a nice opening monologue where it kind of paints Nick in a negative light. He's kind of like brushing the hair of his wife, Amy, and the narration is his voice, and he's just like, sometimes I just want to bash her skull open and just see what spills outside. What is she thinking? And I'm just like, what the fuck is this guy doing? What? Like, and Nick goes to the bar. That's not even just me forgetting the name. That is the name. It's literally called The Bar. And I know this because Nick owns The Bar. His sister is the bartender. And there's literally dialogue where he's just like, oh yeah, that's the name, The Bar. Yeah, and like the character he tells is like, oh, real original. So he goes to the bar and you can tell from his perspective that this is not a happy marriage. Even though, like, we constantly get flashbacks to, like, as Amy is writing in her diary, and she'll flashback within the flashback, to the courting period when Nick courted her, and they started seeing each other, and the proposal, and to her, from her end, it seems like it's a happy marriage in the past. In present day, Nick is very much unhappy. He comes home, finds, like, a glass table is smashed, can't find his wife, calls the police, and the police start noticing, like, oh, well, there's a few things out of place here. This all seems odd. Like, you can see them putting, like, little stickers so that they know where to look when the crime scene team comes in. They know where to look. Because, like, I remember at one point, it looked like there was, like, a speck of blood on a banister in the kitchen, like, up high. So, like, at head level, so it looks like someone backed their head into it and like got hurt. So she's like, interesting. And then she would, and then like, and that's Rhonda Boney that's doing that. And the media is beginning to suspect Nick, and a lot of it's because Nick just how he processes this. I'm gonna say it right now. There's no one way to process your wife missing. But a lot of people were, like getting weirded out, because when Nick had a press release for her, he just goes up and goes, my wife's missing, and if anyone has any information, I ask you to please come forward and share it. And then he just moves along. He's like, all right, business as usual. And everyone, literally, even the cops are looking at him like, is that it? That's all you're going to fucking say about your missing wife? Meanwhile, Amy's parents are up there like, she was a great woman. She brought so many smiles to people's faces. She was a light in everyone's lives. We don't know who would do this. Like, meanwhile, and Nick's just sitting there like, oh, maybe I should have done that. And as we're continuing these flashbacks, we're finding out more about Amy as a person. Amy was famous because of books that were written about her called Amazing Amy. They were children's books. And Amy is like, yeah, basically, that's not me. Like, these are literally just written, like, as to what my mother wishes happened. Like, these are all written as, like, the perfect version made up of my real-life failures. And as we're continuing through these flashbacks, Amy in her diary is noting, like, yeah, the recession hit us hard. First, Nick lost his job, and then I lost my job, and Nick was buying video games, and he was just spending money, like, it was, like, we had income to spend. And eventually, Nick's mother started growing ill, so they moved out of New York, which was a city that Amy loved, and they went to Missouri. I forget the name of the city, but it was Missouri. They go down to Missouri to support his mom, and Nick just grows distant with her, and she's just like, I really didn't like this, so, but what am I gonna do? Like, I love him. But then she also starts detailing how he's growing violent with her, and we get a flashback where, like, she's yelling at him, and at one point he, like, shoves her away from him, and she falls backwards and, like, kind of hits her head against the stair railing. And he looks apologetic. He looks very, like, concerned for her. But in Amy's narration, she says that when she looks at him, she can tell that he just wants to hurt her even more. And it's like, ooh, okay. Okay, we're building it up. We're building up, like, maybe Nick did do it. From Nick's point of view, all he does is come home and find out his wife's not there. So he calls. But fucking Amy is just, from Amy's point of view, it's like, okay, Nick's a violent man. Nick grew violent. He grew disillusioned with their marriage. So maybe, just maybe. And the whole time that the investigative team is working in the house, there's a neighbor who is constantly trying to get into the house. Her name was Andy. Andy's constantly trying to get in the house and talk to the police. And during another press conference, where it's like a search party, and I remember Amy's mom was pissed at Nick because Nick was glad handing everyone, and she's like, my daughter's missing and you're having a freaking party in there, and he's just like, I am just trying to be nice to the people that are here to help us find Amy. And they start to make up, but then during, like, the search party press conference, Andy starts yelling at Nick, and she's like, what did you do to her? What did you do to her and your baby? And everyone's like, wait, what? And because they don't have children. And Andy reveals that Amy was pregnant. And now Nick is saying, no, she's not pregnant. There was no way she was pregnant because we tried. And he's like, I wanted kids. And everyone's like, but you said you didn't. And he's like, of course I said I didn't. It would have just been one more reason for my family to not like her. Why would I tell them that she didn't want kids after that we already got married? So now things are starting to unravel. He's living with his twin sister Margot. And Margot's constantly questioning him. And then when he goes home, there's a knock when he goes to the twins' home. There's a knock on the door, and all of a sudden, I do apologize. I'm looking at my notes. Andy was not the neighbor. Andy was one of the students. I do apologize. Noelle was the neighbor. Sorry, I confused myself there. Noelle's the neighbor. Andy is the student. Andy is Nick's student who knocks on the door in the middle of the night. And lo and behold, we find out that Nick has been having an affair, and Andy actually tells him, hey, you were going to get a divorce. And he's just like, never say that out loud, because he knows how bad that sounds. If it gets out that he was having an affair, he was planning to get a divorce, and now his wife's missing, yo, it's going to be downhill. And we start to get hints that Amy may have known that Nick was cheating on her, because there's clues for a treasure hunt. And when he goes to the office, he finds red panties in his office. and he knows that they're not his wives. And as the clues continue, it's the notes start becoming a bit spiteful. So it's like, oh shit, what happened? Did she find out about the affair? Like, he starts trying to hide all this stuff from the cops. And it's like, oh boy, this is all looking very, very bad. And the cops bring him back into his house. And they're like, yeah, well, just so you know, you're a suspect now because we found all this shit. Like, for one, you expelled, like, look at all the pictures, frames on your fireplace. They're all perfectly in place. But look, and she jumps, makes like a slight jump, like stomps her feet on the ground, and all the frames fall over. And she's like, you mean to tell me that didn't happen when there was a huge struggle that broke the glass table in the same room? And then she shows him how they found evidence that there was blood that had been attempted to be cleaned in the kitchen. A shit ton of it. So she's like, yeah, we're not treating this as a missing person. We're treating this as hostage. We're treating this as murder. Like, they don't have enough evidence at the time to get him. But as we're continuing this, we do find more clues. And Nick is looking for, like, they both find a clue that has something to do with, like, a woodshed or wood. Nick goes to his sister's woodshed, where he finds out that, hey, earlier in the film, he was told that there were a bunch of credit cards put in his name, but he didn't know about. And he's like, yeah, this is fraud. And they're like, is it, or is it just you? Well, now he knows what all those credit cards were used on. A bunch of stuff, like drones, robot dogs, sporting equipment, all of it just hidden in his sister's shed, along with one final note. And it was like a box of puppets, and it had, like, it was Judy and Punch, that's what it was, and it was a symbolic message, because Judy was with child, and Punch beats Judy with a club. So it's like, oh no. And then the police go to a furnace that's inside of his father's old home. They find Amy's diary, which looks like it was attempted to be burned, so now they have more evidence. Alright, so now that we covered roughly the first half of this film, so before I continue, I do want to make this clear. I'm gonna make this clear right now. There is about to be a huge, huge fucking plot twist. So, if you guys do not want spoilers, stop it right now, because this is going to be big, okay? We cut back to about a week ago, the day that Amy went missing. Amy is alive. Amy left of her own free will, and Amy begins to narrate to the audience everything she did to fucking make her husband look guilty. Oh my god. This woman is a mastermind. She literally befriended Noelle, the pregnant neighbor. She emptied the water tank in her own toilet, filled Noelle up with water, so when Noelle went pee, she then took that pee and used it to manipulate pregnancy test results. So that way, the friendly neighbor, or as Amy would call her, the village idiot, would then know that she was pregnant and could then tell everyone, hey, Amy's pregnant. And Nick has already openly lied and said that he didn't want kids, even though he did. What? And she has a shit ton of money now. I forget how she had the money, but she had, like, fat stacks to help her get by. And fucking, meanwhile, she was like, oh yeah, I also committed identity fraud, took my husband's name, filed for credit cards, and just went to town. So that, and just filled it all, put it on in his sister's shed, so that way when the police found it, they could be like, oh good, he lashed out, he has multiple motives. Baby he didn't want. Fucking credit card, like he's in deep debt so he can get life insurance, because that was another thing she did. She had him raise her life insurance to an extensive degree. So now that's multiple motives, as well as the unhappy marriage. that was recorded in the diary, as well as a history of violence that was recorded in the diary. And also recorded in the diary, and with a witness statement, she went out to a bum and asked him if he could sell her a gun. So now they have all the evidence they need. Meanwhile, what's Amy doing? She's camping out in the Ozarks, trying to get by, changes her looks and everything. And then a couple bums in the Ozarks find out that she's been hiding money. So they basically threaten to kill her. They take the money away and they're just like, hey, you should be more careful. You need to watch your story better. We can tell you got that freshly dyed hair. You got fake ass sunburn. You tell me your name's Stella or whatever the fuck she told her it was. You don't even answer to that half the time. So yeah, you should watch it, because let me tell you right now, there are a lot of people who are meaner than we are. And just like that, Amy has no money and she has to make a call. Who does she call? She calls the stalker ex-boyfriend from high school, one that she had to get a restraining order on, but hey, he's rich. That's right, Desi, aka Neil Patrick Harris. And oh my god, Neil Patrick Harris playing a villainous character is so fucking scary. And so Desi decides to be the hero and be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to take you to my lake house and everything's going to be fine. We're going to take you to the lake house and you will never leave me again. I mean, no one will ever take you away to jail. Yeah, that's what I mean. While this is going on, fucking Nick is still getting, like, all the vitriol thrown on him in the media. Andy's come out in a press conference stating that she had an affair with him. That we got the news reporter trying to insinuate that he's having an incestuous relationship with his twin sister. Which, why? Just why would that, would the news reporter even insinuate that to begin with? But as she said, she goes where the story goes. Which I don't know how the story was going in that fucking direction, but okay. This ain't Gravity Falls, goddammit. And now as things start turning around though, because Nick's like, you know what? I don't need to convince everyone that I want my wife back. I just need to convince my wife. So while Amy is locked away in that lake house, she sees a new interview where Nick is basically begging her to come home and admitting to all of his mistakes as a terrible husband, saying if she could come back, I would do anything. I would be a better man for her. I would do whatever it takes to fix our marriage. I just need her to come home. Whoever took her, please bring her back. And Amy buys it. But Amy can't leave. Desi won't let her. So, and there's security cameras literally everywhere. So what does Amy the mastermind do next? She fucking keeps track of where all the cameras are. Makes sure to know where the blind spots are. She drags Desi to a blind spot where the cameras don't see what he does to her. Waits for Desi to leave. Proceeds to put wine into the bottom of her dress, spreads it all around her crotch area, runs over to a window, and proceeds to act as if Desi forced a miscarriage on her. She then starts to do other acts, which I apologize because I do realize that this can be very triggering, so I don't want to go into extreme detail, but she does perform other acts that would make it appear as if she was sexually assaulted. And when she does have consensual sex with Desi, she proceeds to slit his throat. This was a very hard scene for me to watch. I didn't even watch it. I covered my eyes. I had Cicely over, and Cicely was like, yeah, no, they did not turn away. The camera doesn't go away at all. You get to see everything. It is rough. And then Amy goes home in Desi's car, still a bloody mess, comes home to Nick, and in doing so, absolves Nick of any perceived guilt, any accusations, and Nick just whispers to her, he's like, you fucking bitch. And when they're alone, without any reporters, even before that, they had police interviewing Amy. And, like, the lead detective, Detective Boney, is pointing out all these inconsistencies in Amy's story. And I'm just like, get her. Come on, Boney. Get her. You know. You fucking know what's going on. You know what you have to do. But unfortunately, due to all the press on the media, Boney's captain says, enough. We know what happened. Just accept it. At which point, Amy and Nick begin talking, and Nick is trying to get the inner circle together, himself, his sister, his lawyer, and that cop, and be like, we all know what happened. But unfortunately, the cop says, there's no evidence, and I'm off the case. There's nothing I can do. She leaves. The lawyer says, hey man, let's face it, you're gonna be getting a book deal out of this. You might even get a whole movie out of this deal. You should thank her, and try not to piss her off. And he leaves. The twin sister is the only one that's by his side, and right when he's like, and he tells his wife, he's like, I'm going to leave you. That is it. I can't stay here. And the wife says, would you do that to your family? And she reveals that she's pregnant. And my first thought was she was pregnant with Desi's kid, but she then reveals that she did take the sperm sample that Nick had gave to the bank before it was destroyed. And she inseminated herself with it. Her final trump card. She is carrying Nick's baby. And she takes Nick down to the first interview that they do as a couple. And instead of revealing everything, Nick simply says, we're having a baby. And that is where the movie ends. All right, guys, I'm going to cut to a quick commercial break. And then we are going to be covering some fun facts about the film. And I might have a few questions, I might not, but you know what? We're here for it. So thank you for tuning in, and I will be right back. And we are back. All right, so we're going to get some fun facts real quick. We got quite a few of them for this one. So number one, this is David Fincher's highest grossing film. Now remember, David Fincher was the director for this film. And if I can just pull up a cheat sheet real quick. David Fincher, let's see here. And what has David Fincher's filmography, what does his filmography look like? Oh, wow. Wow, yeah, this is his highest grossing? Shit. This guy's done Alien 3. That was his first director for a feature film credit. He's done Fight Club. He's done The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. He's done The Social Network, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and his most recent one, he did Mank for Netflix. And while we're talking Netflix, he's also done the series Love, Death, and Robots for Netflix. This guy's also even done music videos. Oh my god, this guy is dope. And Gone Girl is his highest grossing film. And remember, that film had a box office of $369.3 million. Now, we mentioned Reese Witherspoon is the producer for this film. At one point, she was actually set to play Amy. And I don't know. I'm glad that they made the choice. I'm glad they went with Rosamund Pike. I don't know if I could see Reese Witherspoon playing this role. It certainly would have been different. And I mean, if you had told me that Neil Patrick Harris was going to be a fucking stalker, like manipulative and possessive boyfriend character, I would have been like, I don't know if he could pull that off. I gotta stop doubting actors, honestly. They're in the job for a reason, man. Like, but I'm happy with Rosamund Pike's performance as Amy. During the adaptation process, there were multiple things cut from the film, such as Desi Collins' mother and any flashbacks involving Nick's dead mother. Yeah, that was another thing. Like, they very briefly mention Nick's mom, and I felt like there should have been more to it than that, because it's without any of these flashbacks, it just seems like such a lame excuse to move to Missouri. Like, oh, well, mom's a little sick, we gotta get going. But we could have had such good flashbacks there. Like, I'm curious. Like, I did not read the novel. I'm wondering if she fucking... I'm wondering if she killed his mom. Like, I'm just like, yo, did she kill his mom? Did she kill Desi's mom? Is this bitch just killing people left and right? Because do we even know? Do we even know if Desi is the first person that she's murdered? She's ruined people's lives before. We see that in the film. But I want to know if Desi is the first one she ever murdered. Production, okay, now this is wild. Production was actually shut down for 4 whole days because Ben Affleck refused to wear a New York Yankees baseball cap. He's a big Red Sox fan. Eventually, a compromise was reached where he would wear a Mets cap instead. And you know what? I feel like they deleted that scene where he wore the Mets cap anyway. I literally watched the film looking for a scene with a Mets cap, and I might have missed it, but I did not see one. If you guys want to watch this or rewatch this and look for that Mets cap, fucking screenshot it and just tweet it or post on Facebook or Instagram and let all your friends know, hey, this is the hat that started production back up again after 4 days of saying no to a Yankees cap. Just the more you know. All right, as far as critics are concerned, Rotten Tomatoes gives Gone Girl an 87%, and IGN gives it a 9 out of 10. That's pretty fucking big, dude. I'm gonna fact check myself here on, did it receive any awards? Oh my god, they literally had to make a whole separate Wikipedia page for this shit. It's that, the list is that long, apparently. I wanna know, Academy Awards? Did we get any Academy Awards? We did. Rosamund Pike was nominated for Best Actress. Let's see. Is there any other awards that I give a shit about? There's like so many awards on here that are just so niche. They're like, yeah, there's the Florida Film Critics Circle. There's the Dublin Film Critics Circle. Detroit Film Critics Society. Here we go, Golden Globe. They did not win a Golden Globe. They got nominated. Rosamund got nominated for Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama. David Fincher got nominated for Best Director. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross got nominated for Best Score. And Gillian Flynn got nominated for Best Screenplay. Also, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross got nominated for a Grammy for Best Score Soundtrack for Visual Media. Fun fact, though. Ben Affleck won a Razzie, a Golden Raspberry Award. It was the Razzie Redeemer. In other words, this film redeemed him in the Raspberry Awards eyes. Which, I feel like that does say something. That's gotta say something right there. Oh my gosh. There's the Satellite Awards and the Saturn Awards. Oh, they won Saturn Awards. They won Best Thriller Film, and Rosamund Pike won Best Actress. Screen Actors Guild, Rosamund Pike got nominated. A lot of these are for Rosamund Pike, which I can't be mad about. I cannot be mad about that one bit. After writing the novel, Gillian Flynn had a processing period where she believed that she killed feminism. That's right, by making Rosamund Pike a manipulative, lying bitch, she believed that she killed feminism by making a whole plot around how a woman was just a schemer, a liar, a deviant, a murderous woman. And she like, in interviews, she literally says that she had to, like, put a blanket over her head and just lay there. And she was like, I did it. I just killed feminism. Just to think that a writer could have that much power, that they genuinely believe that they killed a whole feminist movement by writing the novel. This wasn't even for the film. This was when she wrote the novel. And mind you, it, like, shortly after the film's release, I started reading the next fact. But mind you, when they started the process of making this film, that usually what normally happens is they'll have the person who wrote the novel, who wrote the source material, write the first draft of a screenplay, and then they'll go to an actual professional screenplay writer and have them work with that, what they've been given. But David Finch loved Gillian Flynn's work so much that he was like, no, I want to keep you. How would you feel about coming on and working with me on making, like, the final draft for this film? And Gillian was all in. Now, shortly after the film's release, Rosamund Pike stated she would return if Gillian Flynn wrote a sequel. Gillian would later state that she'd be open to the idea of writing a sequel, but it would be quite a few years down the road. Where that leaves us now, almost 8 years later, I'm not sure. All right, guys, so now we're going to go right into the questions before we wrap up. I got 5 questions. Let's see. Number 1, what's easier, leaving your toxic spouse or planning a murder? You know, I feel like this might be, I'm glad this is a question because it's very much an opinion piece. There's no wrong answer here, clearly. Like, I mean, I don't know about you guys. Like, I mean, I'm terrible at planning things. I'm not going to say that I would plan to murder someone, because let's face it, like, my organizational skills, top-notch. Planning skills, usually top-notch. But when it comes to something that I have little to no experience in, such as murder, I'd be like, I don't know, man. There's quite a few variables here. I mean, yeah, I could set up a trap for them to walk in a door, but what if they drop a penny and pick it up as soon as they open the door and the bucket misses their head? I'm gonna have a lot of explaining to do after that, man. Like, I don't know. I feel like I might miss my opportunity. Could I just leave? Yeah, leaving's an option, right? Like, I could just, like, while they're out to work, I could just pack up and leave. That's a thing, right? Yeah? Yeah, I think I'll do that. Like, and then for some people, like this fictional character Amy, who, again, has admitted that she is not Amazing Amy, she actually fails at quite a lot of things, she failed to realize that she literally could have just left. Like, oh my god, I hate him, he made me come to Missouri, go back to New York. Just go back to New York. Yeah, I want to point out, there wasn't even a plan for her to continue living. She literally, her original plan was to just fucking drown herself in a spot where she knew she would be found. And then, because a point that was made in this film is that Missouri has the death penalty, which, yeah, I'm going to get a little political. I don't agree with the death penalty. I don't. I don't agree with it under any circumstance. I'm sorry. Like, I know I'm going to get some backlash on that, but, like, there's literally a lifetime sentences. Most states have lifetime sentences. And I can't even say most states, because I think it's 27 states still legalize capital punishment at the time of this recording. I think that's the number. So over half of the country still murders people. It doesn't happen very often, but it's not abolished. Either way, just putting those politics aside, Missouri still has the death penalty, so she was like, yeah, I'm just going to drown myself, and then I know they'll give him the death penalty. So yeah, I guess for some people, it's easier to plan a murder, which I'm scared. Question number two, how long do you date someone before letting the mask slip? I understand why this question is being asked, because it's said in the film, like, a big theme was that when they started the recording process, they both wore masks in front of each other, in the sense that Nick presents himself as this adventurous man who was very suave and had a cool demeanor. And Amy had presented this facade that she really was Amazing Amy and that she really did have such a great life. And then over time, they started revealing, like, okay, yeah, you know, I'm not actually that adventurous. I do love to just stay in and play video games. And she's like, well, yeah, I'm not perfect. Like, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but I still want to actually enjoy my life, which for her did not mean sitting at home and watching TV. Like, they ended up having very different personalities. And I can understand putting a mask on when you're first courting someone, because you want to put your best foot forward and you have that natural inclination to hide your flaws and be like, I need to present the best possible face to this person. I can understand that. How long before you let the mask slip? That's a tough one, in all honesty. I try to be as open as possible, but I can also understand being like, yeah, you know, there's been some misunderstandings that there's no need to actually bring up. I remember speaking to Sicily just the other day, and we were talking about a story, and I was like, yeah, like the time, and of course this is a more sexual story. And I was like, yeah, there was the time that I had sex with a 51-year-old woman, and she stopped me, and she was like, what? When was this? And I was like, oh, it was way before I met you. I never told you about this. And she's like, no, how old were you? And I was like, I was 18. And her jaw hit the floor. She was like, what? And I'll go into detail about that story on a Casually Filthy in the future. But like, that's the kind of thing. It's like, yeah, like I could have easily been completely open and been like, all right, yeah, I am sexually adventurous from time to time. But that's not always, I've learned from experience that most women do not care to hear of your sexual endeavors on the first date. So do not do that, boys. Do not go down that route. If they ask, okay, they asked. It's on them. But if it does not come up, don't volunteer that information, okay? That's my advice for you. I'd say there's no right answer. There's no firm date. You gotta, like, you gotta gauge the comfort level between the two of you. Like, how long, that's like asking how long before you're ready to take a shit in front of them. Like, I've dated women after like 5 months, they still refuse to let me in the bathroom to brush my teeth while they're having their morning piss. And I'm just like, listen, man, this ain't gonna work. Like, if you can't let me see you in a vulnerable moment, how am I gonna be able to know that you can see me in a vulnerable moment and not think of stabbing me like Amy? Like, question number three, do you think there is a potential for a sequel? Okay, this is a serious question, as if the other two weren't. I don't think so, unless they're gonna be like, oh yeah, like, what would the sequel even be? Like, they're raising a kid, and, like, maybe the kid, maybe Nick starts to see, like, sociopathic tendencies in the kid, like with Amy? Or is it gonna be like, oh, Nick's gonna make a plan to take his child away from Amy and protect the child from Amy? I don't know, there's just so many different ways that it could go, but are any of them, like, worthy of a sequel? That I'm not entirely sure of. That's a good question for Jillian, though. Question number four, does seeing the film make me want to read the novel? Okay. I'm a very big proponent for reading. I love reading. However, I should read more mystery novels, so I want to say yes, but the answer is no. I don't care to read the Gone Girl novel. And that's just a personal opinion. I would totally recommend reading to anyone. But seeing this film, I love this film, and I feel like if I read the novel now, I'm just going to be like, well, what the why the fuck wasn't the film better? Like, I'm going to start finding faults with the film, as if there wasn't some faults already. But, I'm just going to start being like, well, why didn't they do this, and why didn't they do this? And I know the answers already. They have a cutting room floor. The movie was 2.5 hours. Like, do I really want to know how much content they actually had to cut? So, seeing the film does not make me want to read the novel. I'm content with just watching the film in this scenario. Last question. How does this film make me feel about my past relationships? Ooh, we're getting a little personal on this one. Okay. Oh my god, I haven't gone into detail on my past relationships. I mean, I have on Casually Filthy, but there have been some very toxic aspects of my relationships that I haven't gone into detail, mostly because I didn't feel like I had a good time to do it. Like, you know, and also talking about it in such a public forum invites backlash and criticism. But I have had some very toxic relationships, and there was like one girl in particular, she would pull some nasty shit that she planned well in advance for. Like, I would find evidence months after the fact. Like, she hid this shit real well. And I wouldn't even be looking for it, because she was such a good fucking actress that I would believe her. And then I find out after the fact, and it's like, what? Like, I'm talking mind games to the max. Seeing this film, it makes me happy knowing I got out of that relationship before I ended up in as deep shit as Nick. Because I very much could see the girl that I'm thinking of pulling this shit, like, faking her own death and just having me go to jail for it. I fully believe... I literally had a brother of mine. I say a brother, but meaning he's a very close friend that I consider a brother. And I gotta get him on the show. But he literally wrote, like, he had a challenge in college, and it was to write a short film that they could possibly, like, film and put on YouTube. And he almost, like, I think he got selected, but then, like, some logistical issues came up, and the class was literally like, yeah, we're just not gonna be able to film it, but you still pass. Either way, he admitted he literally wrote his short film about me and my toxic-ass relationship while I, like, and he was like, oh, yeah, like, I literally wrote, like, a big what-if story where she tells you, like, oh, well, I'm going to do this and this and this unless you do this, and your character's just so mentally beaten and broken, which I was. I was very much a mentally broken mess at this point in my life. I'm so happy that I could inspire my friend to make a whole film about my tragedy, though. And he's like, yeah, she basically just broke you, and this is just a what-if scenario where you murder someone because she asks you to. And then police come, and you ask her, what are we gonna do? And she's just like, I'm not, like, we don't gotta do anything. You're the one that fucking murdered him. You're on your own. Like, basically just, like, mentally broke me to the point where I just decided to murdered someone on her behalf. But she's like, oh, I didn't do shit. You're the one that's in trouble. Bye, boy. Boy, bye. Like, and... like, it's just knowing that I would say that I would not murder someone. I'm confident in saying that. But I was, again, I was a mentally broken mess at that point. And I'll go into more detail in the future, Casually Filthy, I'm sure, somewhere down the line. But good God, just knowing that the stories like this, like Gone Girl, that they are more feasible than you would think. You watch this and you're like, there's no way that could happen in real life. No, that shit can happen in real life. I've experienced like something, like if that shit's a 10, I've experienced a 7. That was very dangerously rising to an 8 and beyond. Like, so just seeing this film, it makes me feel happy that I have gone out of my past toxic relationships and that I learned a bit more to recognize red flags. I like Amy did a very good job at hiding those red flags, I'm not gonna lie, but I'm this film makes me feel happy that I got the fuck out of my past relationships. All right, on that note, I hope this was a nice introspective look at a tragic film. If you guys have seen it and you agree or disagree with any of my thoughts, please feel free to share. Share this podcast with your friends. This can be like a little club. Yeah, you know, get started. Speaking of which, my next bit of homework for you guys is going to be Friday the 13th, part 2. That's right, Friday the 13th, part 2. And you don't got to wait till Tuesday for this. That shit's coming this Friday. So you're going to have Cicely and I, and we're going to watch it, and I'm doing the thing. I'm going to be like, hey, where can I stream Friday the 13th, part 2? All right, guys, you got a few options here. If you have Amazon Prime Video and you need a premium subscription, they say, you can watch it. I'm wondering if by premium subscription they mean like live TV, because I'm like, because they say Fubo TV, and I'm like, I thought Fubo was live TV. I don't know if they have much on demand, but. Same deal with Sling TV. Yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to actually watch this, like, on demand. So, let's see here. YouTube, Google Play, and Vudu, they're currently renting the movie out for starting at $2.99, $3. Apple TV, you're looking at $4. I wish I knew this ahead of time, because I already rented it on Apple TV, so don't do what I did. Rent on YouTube, Google Play, or Vudu. And, yeah, you can watch those. You watch it. It's a pretty decent film, about an hour and a half, and Cicely and I are going to be covering it in a bonus Friday episode, and that's going to be awesome. And then next Tuesday, we're going to be having a Grappling with Rey episode, so no homework for that. Just enjoy as much wrestling content as you please, or UFC, whatever pops up, that's what I'm going to be covering next week. I'm happy to be saying that I am the new owner of 73 Dream Studios Variety Show, and I hope to keep bringing you some amazing content. And with that, much love and enjoy the rest of your day.